You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon.
Oh, shit.
What?
I had a joke for here.
What was it?
I remember.
I know what the joke is. I watched the live stream.
What's the joke? Yeah, refresh Tony's memory so she can do it.
So I can say it.
The joke is that...
Oh, shit, that's really
funny. Oh, yeah. That's pretty good.
Do you want to take it from the
top? Yeah, I want you to set me up.
Okay. Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon.
A Doctor Who podcast for the modern era.
Good job.
All of that has to be in.
Today we're going to be talking about the third serial of the 20th season of Doctor Who, Modern Undead, which consists of four episodes that aired from February 1st, 1983 to February 9th, 1983.
True facts!
And I want to give a special shout out to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden!
You can check him out at matthewgolden.net. And today we have a returning favorite, my favorite, Robert Holmes duo. It's Felicity Cousinitz and Christine Tangerine Dream Cherry.
He spent so long on that.
I did. Welcome back, you guys.
Hello. It's not too late for that to be my legal name.
I like it.
Yeah, fuck Diane. Fuck it.
How are you guys doing?
Well, you know, it's been isolated for a while, working from home, which I'm glad that I can do, but it's kind of boring.
I envy you. I want to be working from home, and I am not. And two people at my work have gotten COVID, so that's fun.
Oh, man. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
No, I also do not work from home, and while I don't love the idea of working from home, like, the idea of going out into the world is hellish and frightening, and I don't care for it.
I'm glad we're starting the podcast off with this positive energy.
Yeah, of course.
There is no other energy. This is it. This is it for the rest of the year.
Yeah, no, this is the world that we live in.
2020.
We're going to time travel back to a happier era. In fact, two happier eras.
All I will say, you all can speak for yourself. I'm living my best life right now, so.
Well, that's awesome.
You've already broken the podcast exclusive on Burn Noticed, so we're your sloppy seconds.
I'm literally begging you to stop using half of those words.
Fair enough. But like, hey, you guys, Chris Cherry is actually a woman.
Yeah, I know. It's a twist. It's a Stephen Moffat reveal.
Ooh. I wouldn't ask Stephen Moffat to produce anything about my life, probably. But
that's right. I will say, I can talk at length about how the entire 12th Doctor era is just one long trans coming out story.
That would be cool. I would look forward to hearing that.
That actually makes sense.
I'm not the only one who has this opinion. This is, I think, a very common feeling amongst trans Doctor Who fans.
But Chris Cherry is the one who's loudest about it.
Yeah, I'm the one who talks about it on Twitter sometimes. Even before it was decided that he was legit gonna regenerate into a female Doctor, like, it's all over.
Yeah, I'm starting to fall into place in my head.
I've seen a lot of trans women talk about how, like, the scene at the end of Deep Breath where Clara's talking to 11 on the phone, and then, like, 12 is like, you're looking right at me, but you can't see me, just see me. That's, like, the most trans line ever.
Yeah.
And Stephen Moffat's work in general is a lot about working out his complicated relationship with masculinity, like, really within, like, this narrative, and, like, especially with 12, kind of, is a lot about building yourself up from the ground up after, like, a very tough time, and interrogating a lot of that. Like, he starts out in Series 8 just being like, am I a good man? And then finally ends up, I'm not a man.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a narrative that speaks to a lot of trans women.
Does Modern Undead talk to trans women?
No, I don't think it does. But I like it anyway.
Should we talk about it?
Yeah, no, why not?
It's fine.
I am very excited because I have been told that everyone except for Tony has titles for this serial.
Oh, shit. Now it seems like I've not...
contributed?
Yeah.
You could just do your classic Tony thing.
That's true. People come for that. They love that.
All right.
I am making no claims that these are good titles.
I'm going to say mine are great, though they're probably not.
They never are.
I'm going to say mine are alliterative, but I can't speak to their quality.
I mean, that's you're at least putting some like thought into it.
Mm-hmm.
My titles are in no way internally consistent. There is not a theme to them. There is nothing about them that like suggests a pattern or anything like that. It's very random.
I have titled episode 1, School Unit.
That's better than mine. Mine is... Fast Times at Brigadier High.
I like them both. I just called it The Bargain.
I like that. It's mysterious.
I spent a lot of time thinking about what would make a good title to kind of encapsulate the themes that are present in this episode.
Uh-huh.
And after a lot of time thinking about it, I've decided to call this episode 1.
It's, you know, it's kind of subtle,
mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
Brilliant.
I knew you'd get that.
A slightly sardonic edge.
I mean, this episode is all about beginnings.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, we start at a school and immediately get some great music. I am in love with the score of this entire serial.
It's very good.
Yeah.
Is this the music that a lot of people complain about? Because if they do, they are wrong.
I don't remember people specifically complaining about this serial or this season even. I think that...
because I know there's a period of time where people complain about the music.
Yeah, I think complaints come later in the probably Colin Baker and Sylvester McCoy eras, but that's just a vague recollection.
I mean, I tend to think that people want to rag on the 80s music in general.
Yeah, it gets even more synthy later on.
Fantastic.
I'm excited.
Although this has a lot of really good uncharacteristic use of guitar.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that.
Heavily processed guitar. I almost thought maybe it wasn't actually a guitar, but a guitar sound on a synthesizer.
Do we know for sure?
I have no idea. I have done negative research.
You didn't even watch this serial.
I forgot things about the serial.
So we get some great music and we get a great car and we meet two people.
Some boys. We meet some boys who are less than great.
Fucking suck.
I hate them both in different ways.
So it's funny. I could not remember I don't think that I reacted positively to Turlough at the time, but I liked him. I mean, I came to like him over the course of the serial. What's really funny...
so it's like a reverse Adric.
I can't help but be informed by my, you know, my later view of Mark Strickson, who I have to say, out of all the actors I've seen at conventions, he has aged very finely. He is a good-looking guy. And he is not a good-looking guy here. Partly because they dyed his hair red because he's actually a blonde and they wanted him to contrast with Peter Davison.
I heard they initially wanted him to shave his head.
Oh, man.
And he was like, oh, no thank you.
Well, I'm glad he didn't do that, but I think that he is definitely greatly improved with age. And he seems like, he's just like a really chill guy, too.
I think if he was blonde, he'd look like, what's his name? The awful boy king from Game of Thrones.
Oh, Joffrey.
Joffrey. He'd have a real Joffrey vibe, and that's not a thing you want.
What jumped out at me is that, you know, Adric is played by someone who is the age that he was supposed to be. Turlough clearly is not. I looked up his age. He's about 23, 24 here, and definitely does not look like a school-age boy.
The weird thing about Turlough, and the weird thing about Turlough in this serial, and the decision that they made with Turlough overall, is to never, never... until, and this is a mild spoiler for you two, until his final serial, to explain what his fucking deal is.
That's right.
No. Really?
After this, I don't think it's mentioned that he doesn't come from Earth until his final serial.
It's wild. It's a wild decision. So you watch the serial, and like occasionally he'll be like, I want to go home, or like, I want to leave Earth. I'm like,
yeah, I was very confused about it because I didn't realize at first that they were saying he was an alien. And it wasn't, I was like, wait, are they saying he's an alien? Like, it wasn't very clear.
No, it's not. It's weird. It's as if, like, they put it in Doctor Who magazine before and were like, everyone knows.
Then they're like, oh yeah, we gotta do something about that.
It's odd.
This is like, Palpatine's back, y'all.
Yeah, it has to give him, you know, he has to have the Black Guardian has to have a hook into him.
I also want to point out that the serial in which his deal is finally explained, also a Peter Grimwade serial.
So I actually called these two guys the douchebag and the milksop. Mostly because I've been really reading a lot of 60s comics and they use the term milksop way too much.
I disagree that they use it too much.
His name is Ibbotson, I believe.
Ibbotson.
But they call
he's
him...
not super important. He just whines a whole bunch.
Yeah, he's very whiny. But they call him Ibbo.
He actually calls him Hippo because he's fat.
Oh, is that why? Okay, see, I thought
this
he was calling him Ibbo.
So mean
because that
to
was his
him.
Name. And I was like, I thought he was saying Hippo, but I was like, oh, I guess it's Ibbo because that's his name. They're calling him Hippo because he's fat. He's not that large.
He's not.
No, I know.
It's weird.
Everybody's super rude to this kid for his weight.
Like, obviously, you should not fat shame people. Like, do not do that. That is wrong. That is fucked up. And if you do that, I don't want to be friends with you. But also, he's not fat.
No, he's not.
It seems like just like a they're mistaken.
I think it's just it's supposed to. I mean, it shows you a little about how awful British schoolboys are to each other.
That's true.
Okay, but the brick doesn't. Is the one who's the worst.
Here's my thing about the brick. Are we meant to assume that that is a side effect of what we will later learn is his amnesia?
That he just becomes rude?
I mean, kind of. The idea that, like, he's forgotten all about the doctor. Yes.
Without the doctor's influence. Yeah.
Oh.
I hadn't thought of that.
Without the doctor's benign, like, influence over all those years, suddenly it's all gone. And he sort of reverts to, like, an awful military man.
Because he was, you know, awful in some of his unit era stories.
Exactly. And, like, without that influence. And not even the memory of that influence.
I will allow it so that I like the brick better. He straight up calls Hippo.
He says his body is disgusting.
Again, I don't know if that's meant to be a clue, but I am interpreting it as such.
That's the only way it sits well with me. So, me too.
They've also padded out the Brigadier a little bit to contrast him to his younger self that we see.
By the way, Joe, do you know the backstory of this?
Yes, and it makes more sense because it was not originally supposed to be the Brigadier. It was supposed to be Ian Chesterton, which makes sense that he would be a teacher instead of the Brig being a teacher.
A math teacher.
I think they went through a couple of people and couldn't get them. And then,
yeah, they thought that Ian Martyr, Harry Sullivan, was considered as well.
I got opinions later about Harry Sullivan. We'll get there. I'm so furious about this one scene. But anyway, the two kids...
They steal a car.
They steal this car, almost immediately wreck it because they almost get in a head-on collision, steer off the road to avoid hitting someone and wreck. And Turlough has an out-of-body kaleidoscope experience.
This is such a good, like, visual.
It is. I love it.
That background did not age well, although I think that the rest of the effects in this serial are not that bad.
I mean, it depends on what you mean by did not age well. Because I don't know what it was meant to portray realistically. It's not as if the effect failed to seem natural. Because that's not a thing that it's going for.
It seems, I mean, if I was going for, like, you know, out of body or, like, cosmic void, I would have gone another way.
It is an aesthetic that I associate with music videos.
Yeah.
Well, it is the 80s.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's almost like a Max Headroom sort of space.
It is. Spoiler alert, Max Headroom might figure into one of my titles.
Well, Max Headroom definitely has a very heavy connection with Doctor Who. What with, was it, Horror Fang Rot. So, yeah, anyway... Turlough is in this kaleidoscope world and talks to a guy in a bird hat.
Black Guardian.
This motherfucker has a bird on his head. I fucking love it.
It's so good. It's very good. He's the Black Guardian, right? Like, is that supposed to be like, we're supposed to not know that, or are we supposed to know that? Because they just call him the Guardian.
I think he says... Say
he says,
Black?
I'm your guardian, and I think we're supposed to recognize his voice, at least, if not his face.
But was it him in the last?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, cool. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, J&T was very... So the concept of this whole season, the 20th season, was to bring back something from the show's past in every story.
But was it the same actor?
It was, yes, it was. Valentine Dial is his name.
Who was also Deep Thought in the radio series of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, cool.
Ooh.
I'm on this episode because this, for a long time, was my favorite Fifth Doctor serial. I've kind of moved on, and now Enlightenment is my favorite Fifth Doctor serial. And I just want to mention, since I won't be on that episode, there's a moment in Enlightenment where the Black Guardian does the most amazing laugh. You'll know it when you see it. And I just want to take a moment to acknowledge that really good laugh that I watched like once a week.
Okay.
This is foreshadowing.
Yeah, a lot of foreshadowing that I'm doing right now.
This is definitely one of my favorites of the era.
My next note is unfortunately broken up on my screen. It says, Turlo isn't from Earth and wants to leave, so the Guardian says he will get him off Earth if he will destroy the Doctor for him.
Oh, no.
And he gives him a fancy shot glass.
Yeah, it looks kind of like a shot glass. It kind of like a doorknob.
Yeah, it could also be a crystal doorknob.
Here's my thing about this whole serial.
Yeah.
And really the Black Guardian's entire plan. If you're going to mind control somebody to kill someone for you.
He doesn't really mind control them, but yeah.
But he's not super doing it of his own free will.
But he's not being mind control.
Why would you pick just like a random schoolboy?
Because here's why. Because he's a little turd.
Have you met little schoolboys?
Maybe the Black Guardian knows that the Doctor is coming here, maybe because of the time weirdness around this moment and because of the Brigadier. That's just my guess.
That is, I think, my serious answer, but also, he's a little shit. The Black Guardian sees the seeds of evil in this boy and is like, oh, I can mold him.
But surely there are more competent people.
Probably. I mean, he's got something that he can offer Turlo.
Which is a trip back home. All expenses paid.
I don't know what that means, and apparently I won't for a very long time.
You won't. It's so weird. It's such a weird choice.
We see who the car belongs to, and I'm very excited. It's the brig. Tony didn't know. I knew. Tony didn't know.
That's awesome.
I didn't know the first time they showed him. I was like, they said Brigadier, and I was like, it's the brig. And then they showed him, and I was like, it's not the brig. It's just some old guy. And I was like, oh, that's the brig.
It has been like 8 years since he's been on the show.
Well, he didn't have the mustache. That was the big thing.
He didn't have his mustache?
No, old.
How did I miss that?
Young Brig has the mustache. Old Brig doesn't.
Both of his hair has a bald spot, so I'm not sure which is his real hair.
I am assuming the older hair is the real hair.
Yeah, I think they darken it.
Yeah, because it's like bigger. It looks like it's a little bit bigger and longer than the younger hair. And so I can buy that maybe that's a nice wig. Or that it's a wig, at least. I can't make any sort of claims as to its niceness.
I wasn't sure. I'm still not 100% positive what's going on.
I'm not either.
What's real and what's an illusion?
I will say that, like, when he shows up a few years later and is, like, 4 or 5 years older, his hair looks closer to the young Brigadier hair.
So, Turlo agrees to this deal, wakes up. We cut to Team TARDIS. And we do the same thing we've been doing, like, every episode, or every serial.
We gotta deal with last episode for just a little bit.
Just a little bit. We get a little bit of snake dance aftermath of Tegan being like, I'm traumatized. And the Doctor's like, yeah, get over it.
We only have these 5 minutes to deal with your trauma.
You wanna wrap this up real quick, and then we'll move
on
to
Mariscon. We gotta get to Nissa's new outfit.
Oh, yeah, Nissa's new outfit.
Super important.
Nissa's new outfit is very good.
It's a very good outfit, which she is wearing to cheer up Tegan.
Oh.
Because they are definitely space lesbians.
100%. It's canon now, right?
It is canon. RTD made it canon that they are space lesbians.
Yeah, it's even more clear in Terminus.
I will take this canon from RTD. I am still not going to accept the weird thing he did to Ian and Barbara.
I don't love what he did to Ace either.
Apparently Sophie Aldred wasn't keen on it either.
How would you describe Nissa's new outfit?
There's denim involved.
It's kind of denim-y. It's got like a flap. It's got a chest flap.
It's like a half unzipped jacket almost. That's like folded over.
It's rock and roll.
That is pointedly open.
Is it yellow on the inside?
Yeah, it's yellow. It's denim, and then like the inside is yellow. So the little like flap is yellow.
Very good. I like the stripe thing from last serial, but this one's even better.
But then she's also got, I think it's like leggings and then like thigh high boots.
Also a good choice.
What I like about this though is that because they're really trying to kind of go from one serial right to the next in a pretty, like, strict way, that means every time a character changes, they have to come out and be like, I just changed. Like, Tegan's still wearing her same outfit, which is also very good. Nyssa comes out and be like, hey, look, new clothes for me. Like, they have to, like, enter it. Like, that's why she's off screen.
That's a good point.
As soon as she comes out, though, and, like, stands next to Tegan, you're like, those are girlfriends. Those two people are dating.
Then we cut back to Turlo, who's in the infirmary, I guess, at the school. I guess that's what you call it, right?
Yep.
They want him to get some rest, and he doesn't wanna. And they found a small glass thing in his pocket at the crash. They say it's his. And he's like, what's this about? What? It looks like an egg inside of a see-through glass Chinese food box.
I thought it looked like a crystal tube.
I forgot you didn't see it until this scene, but that's what I said looked like a shot glass, and Chris said looked like a doorknob.
It looks very much like something, but I can't decide what it is.
Did you say a tooth?
A crystal tooth.
All right.
No, I get that.
That's what it looks like.
It's whatever is in the eye of the beholder.
Truly.
And then the headmaster gets on to him for being a little shit.
And then because he's a little shit, he just fucking lies.
Yeah. Says he wasn't driving. He was covering for Hippo.
And the headmaster just buys this immediately? He's like, oh, thanks for telling me.
The headmaster seems like kind of a pushover.
I get that impression too.
So then he leaves and Turlo is left alone. And the guardian talks to Turlo through the glass thing. And basically almost every scene of these two is just, destroy the doctor! Okay,
I'll do it, jeez!
They're super repetitive, but on the other hand, I love watching, is it Valentine Dial?
Yeah.
I love watching him talk. I love his amazing voice. I love his bird hat on his head. And like, I could just watch him say the same thing over and over again forever.
Meanwhile, back on the TARDIS, a ship heads straight at the TARDIS. It's a big red-looking thing. They materialize on board it. Brig talks to the headmaster and hopes that he's going to give these kids a lot of punishment. You better punish the hell out of them, he says.
See? Because he's bad. Because he doesn't remember the doctor.
Right. And the headmaster says it's tough to do that because Turlo's parents are dead or something.
Yeah, that's probably why he's a bit of a pushover around Turlo, because he feels bad for him.
It's also, like, that's the first hint. Like, he says that, like, his parents are dead. I mean, it's not the first hint, like, he talks about it earlier. But, like, this thing where he's like, his parents are gone, and the solicitor that I deal with is very strange. I don't remember if that's ever explained who the solicitor is, ever.
I don't think so.
So Turlo's like a fucked up Superman.
Kind of.
With no powers.
Again, it's never clear who the solicitor is, so I'm going to say that it's Missy.
Ooh.
I'll take it.
This is a dry run for the thing that she eventually does with Clara. This was the first attempt, and she roped in the Black Guardian.
Write that big finish story, Chris.
Right.
So Hippo comes to Turlo.
God, that should have been my title. The Hippo comes to Turlo.
So Hippo comes to Turlo. Turlo says, it's fine. I took the blame for the wreck. You're going to be all right.
What a little turd.
He's just lying to everyone. And then he leaves and Hippo follows him. He's being led by the glass thing. So Team TARDIS have landed on this ship and they walk around it. It's completely deserted and absolutely gorgeous. I love the set design on this so much. There's some cool head portraits and video games. What more do you need?
Yeah, it looks like an organ at some point, like just the control panels and things like that. It's just so art deco. It's really great.
It's gorgeous. And like, it's supposed to be, they call it like the Queen Mary or something.
And it's like a pleasure ship, right?
That is what they call it, which I hated.
I mean, you don't do business on it. You just do pleasure. Not gross.
Video
games. There's got to be kids around.
The word pleasure is not great.
I mean, it's great when I'm experiencing it. I think you've got some hangups you need to deal with.
Right?
And they sort of like go around and they find out that the ship has been in orbit for 3,000 years. And it's just, something happened. Does that get explained?
No, it does. If I remember correctly, the explanation for this was that every certain number of years, it got close enough to a planet to teleport onto the planet and get assistance or whatever.
Yeah, to try to find someone to help them.
I don't know if something had gone wrong here, or I don't know if they were necessarily headed towards Earth, like that was the end goal.
Or if that was just its next thing.
Yeah, I think the idea was that they were just drifting forever. I don't know why they're in orbit.
For 3,000 years.
I wasn't clear if they had been in orbit for 3,000 years or if they had been drifting for 3,000 years and were currently in orbit. I don't know. It's unclear.
Cool. So Turlough gets some directions from the Guardian to mess around with this, like, monument. And he presses some, like, a thing, and then a transmat capsule appears, which he knows what it is, and calls Hippo an idiot for not knowing what it is. It looks like a giant, like, metal egg. Turlough gets in it and leaves Hippo behind as it disappears. And he winds up on the ship and immediately tries to take control of the ship to fly it away and get back home, I suppose. And the Guardian just says, nope, you gotta do my thing. You gotta destroy the Doctor. Turlough tries to throw the, like, glass thing away, but it's stuck to his hand.
The crystal tooth.
The crystal tooth.
I think that it's a bit over the top, but I think that Mark Strickson's acting is very good in this.
I agree. I like him.
I think it's a good performance. A little bit, I mean, it does get a little bit monotonous.
I don't have a problem with his acting. I think the character is, like,
punchable,
yeah.
My thing with Turlough is that, unlike Adric, he was conceived as an asshole with an arc. And I think it's an interesting concept. Like, the idea of here is a companion that may not be trustworthy and actually their intentions are bad is interesting.
It's interesting, and it's kind of like, I feel like it's something that JNT tries out on the way to, hey, let's make the Doctor an asshole, which is what happens with Colin Baker.
It's kind of this thing that JNT keeps trying to do, where he keeps trying to introduce, like, ongoing plot elements. A lot of them are very conceptually interesting and terribly executed.
Yes, that is fair to say.
And I think Turlough is definitely one of those poorly executed things, but I think not as poorly executed as some of the things. And again, unlike Matthew Waterhouse, Mark Strickson can act. I will say one more thing watching this episode. It's been a while since I watched it. And in the meantime, I had plotted an idea for, like, what my first episode of Doctor Who would be if I was in charge, just as a thought experiment. And I remember when I was trying to break that, I remember thinking, I should do a thing wherein the new companion gets trapped in, like, an alien space before they ever even meet the Doctor and meet up with the Doctor on it in an alien environment. That's fun. They've never done that before. And then I watched this again. I was like, oh, wait, right. Yeah, no, they did that. Never mind.
There is a lot of, like, they're both on the ship, Turlough and the Doctor, and they kind of keep missing each other because, like, the Doctor and everybody go to the TARDIS and they can't leave because there's something blocking it. It can't dematerialize. And then they get out of the TARDIS, and the Turlough sneaks onto the TARDIS, trying to leave again. And again, the Guardian's like, no!
There's a lot of near misses, which of course becomes the whole point of the plot later on.
Joe, you said in the live stream that this was like a space farce.
Yeah, it's like a space farce. A lot of slamming doors, you know? It's like a space farce, but not as funny.
Not farcical.
No. It's got the, like, pace and, like, everything of one, but there's no jokes. That's one thing I'd say, like, would put this in, like, very top tier for me, is if there were jokes. I mean, there are some, but there's not enough.
I mean, that's one of my complaints about this era overall.
So the Doctor finds the capsule and realizes that it's part of the signal, that there's a signal from it to wherever it comes from, which is Earth, that is jamming the TARDIS. And it's apparently been on Earth for 6 years. That'll be a clue to something later. So the Doctor runs back onto the TARDIS to do some stuff, and he bumps into Turlough, which that scene actually is funny, because he just runs in and he starts messing with the console and then looks up like, oh, who the hell are you?
In a parallel that I'm just now realizing to Time Crash.
Huh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
They both kind of look up at each other in that same way. And again, not to talk too much about Stephen Moffat, but, like, and this, of course, is a serial that, like, plays with time stuff in a way that the show usually doesn't. And it's probably
Stephen Moffat's favorite story.
Yeah.
I actually really enjoy how this story plays with time. Like, it's, like you said, it's not something we've actually done a lot of with Doctor Who, or at least this, like, prominent.
Not yet. Yeah.
I mean, we've had a couple of things here and there, but this is the most, like, where it's been an ongoing part of the plot. Closest thing I think is probably that third Doctor serial I don't care for. Day of the Daleks, is that it?
Yes.
I like the concept of that one, and I think the execution's real poor. But Turlough's sort of introduced to Tegan and Nyssa, who are both kind
does
of immediately
explain
like.
Explain why he's there?
I don't remember.
Because I vaguely remember that he's like, oh, I just wandered on. And Tegan's like, you just wandered on? And the doctor's like, and neither the doctor and Nyssa's like, yeah, like you did.
I think it's Nyssa.
It's Nyssa. Nyssa says that too. Yeah, it's a very adorable scene. Because they actually say that by themselves after Turlough's left. And she's like, let's bitch about Turlough, right?
These girls do not like Turlough.
They do not. It's great.
Nyssa is a little bit more on board with Turlough at first, but is quickly not on board with Turlough. And Tegan hates Turlough.
Immediately.
It's notable that, you know, throughout this serial, Nyssa is the more trusting one when we later come to Modron. And Tegan is the one that's not having it.
It's a theme. So the Doctor and Turlough are going to go back to the transmat capsule, transmat back to Earth, and then they've set up so that the TARDIS should follow. They transmat to Earth, the Doctor finds something in the monument that like is sending the signal that's blocking the TARDIS and starts fussing with it. And Turlough prepares to give the Doctor karmic retribution and is going to hit him over the head with a large rock. A very first Doctor attempt to deal with your problems. And that's
how those things come back around.
And that is the first cliffhanger.
You know, considering that this whole season is meant to be one long series of callbacks and homages, that could have been intentional.
Yeah, it absolutely could have. Didn't catch that before.
And so now that was the end of episode one. We are now into episode two, which I have called A Brigadier Friend.
Aww. That's the best one you've ever done.
Aww.
Really? I thought you would groan at it.
No, I like
I'm
it.
I'm not getting the reaction I expected.
I think it's because you mentioned friends.
Chris, what's yours?
Mine, this is my worst title because it's the most generic. Mine is just A Talk Across Time.
Oh.
Felicity?
My first one was The Bargain. This is The Brigadier times two.
I almost called an episode The Two Briggs, and I decided against it. But it was close there for a little while.
I called this one episode two.
Brig two. So he's about to hit the Doctor over the head with this big rock, and the thing that the Doctor is messing with explodes, knocking over the Doctor, Turlough, and his rock. It's a lucky thing that that rock was there, you know?
Really is.
Can we talk about what happened or not until we figure out what happened? Because you figured it out really early on.
Oh, yeah. Nyssa and Tegan exit the TARDIS. The TARDIS shows up there and they exit the TARDIS and there's no one there. And you didn't catch that, I don't think.
No, I didn't.
To be fair, you two were talking to each other.
Yeah.
I caught it, though.
I was watching it. I have literally my notes. The first note for episode two. Oh no, did you guys miss the most important part?
I didn't. Tony did.
I did.
Because I'm pretty sure immediately afterwards I was like, oh shit, they're not in the same time. Though to be fair, I thought that Tegan and Nyssa were in the future. Because it definitely leads you to believe that. If you do catch that they're not in the same time.
I don't know if... Does it lead you to believe that it's the future?
Well, if you think that the burnt man in the capsule is, in fact, the Doctor.
Gotcha.
It could be the future.
I hadn't thought of it that way. Yeah, you're right.
I bet it's hard to think of it with a fresh slate, you know? Because you've seen it before and you know what's going to happen. And I mean, I knew it wasn't the Doctor, but I was like, I bet it's the future. And there was a period where I was like, maybe it is the Doctor. Doesn't look like him, but maybe it is.
It's a natural conclusion, certainly, for them to come to.
It almost is. I will say one of the things about Modron Undead that it doesn't quite succeed at, but does enough if you're willing to go along with it, is that people keep buying that Modron is the Doctor. Like, that's the thing. He clearly does not look like Peter Davison, even when he's all burnt up.
I think that they're just so shocked. You know, they're not going to look that closely at him. They think, oh my God, the Doctor's horribly injured.
Exactly. I think it plays. He is. It plays. They never overplay their hand totally because the next time they see Modron, he claims to have regenerated. Later, when the Brig has his own, are you the Doctor? You're not. That doesn't last very long. Like, they're smart to not overplay that first miscommunication or mistake.
Though it does seem like later on that Modron knows about them. Does that explain? He seems to have knowledge of them.
I mean, I think he figures out pretty quickly that this is a TARDIS, and so that there must be a Time Lord around, and the guy they're talking about. I think he's, I mean, he's, yeah, there are probably some gaps here, but I think he's just a quick thinker.
Yeah, he might just be good at cold reading.
Because I think he does say, like, my dear friend, the Brig, or something, without even, like, I don't even know if, like, the Brig said he was the Brig.
I think he's cold reading. I think that's exactly what he's doing. He's gambling that he's, you know, guessing correctly.
So, meanwhile, in the past... No, wait. Meanwhile, in the future...
Future.
The Doctor and the Brig reunite. The Brig has no idea who he is. And the Doctor puts on a goofy smile and follows him. I love that. Because the Brig showed up because Hippo brought him to the monument. And that's when the Brig was like, you're disgusting. And the Doctor follows him back and, like, he's trying to talk to him. And the Brig has no idea who he is. Doesn't remember... Like, when he says, I'm the Doctor, he doesn't even remember that he's the Doctor. But the Doctor mentions Unit. And he's like, oh, I remember Unit. Let's go talk privately. So they go to his house, which I didn't notice this until I was like watching like a special feature thing. But they dress the exterior of his house differently in the past and the present. Yeah, when they first show him in the past, when Tegan comes up to him, because Tegan goes to look for a doctor to help this burnt guy that they found in the capsule that they took to the TARDIS, who's modern. When she goes to find a doctor, she finds the Brig, and he's outside his house, and he's, like, planting flowers and stuff in his garden. And when you go to the present day, the ex outside of his house is, like, overgrown.
That's very clever. Because he's supposed to be just starting, you know, he's new there when Tegan meets him. She mentions Turlough. He has to look at the list of students to see if there's a Turlough.
Yeah, he says he's the new boy.
That was when I was also like, oh, wait, so they're in the she's in the past, not the future. So it does take me a while.
The
like, there's definitely some twists.
They set that up is so great, too. It's just the Doctor talking about his friend Tegan and having Brig be like, I remember Tegan.
I love that he, like, of everything, he remembers her. Like, he doesn't remember Nyssa. He doesn't remember Modron. He's like, oh, that Australian girl, Tegan.
It seems to be that he's kind of gaining memories as things happen, sort of Christmas Carol style, Doctor Who Christmas Carol style.
Well, it's also kind of like unlocking traumatic memories.
Yeah, there's kind of a metaphor going on here about PTSD.
Yeah, and it's surprising that, you know, this is 1983. It's surprising that they're kind of dealing with that subject.
That's the one thing that works about this being the Brig instead of being Ian.
Agreed.
You know, he's a military man who's experienced some messed up stuff, presumably.
He has this scene about it where he talks about how, like, he's been seeing a doctor and, like, he's fine, and he kind of blows up.
Yeah, he gets very angry.
He has, like, a breakdown about having a nervous breakdown. Tony at that point said, this man needs some therapy.
But yeah, and I kind of like that. I do like that, A, it's the Brig, and that we can kind of, even obliquely, kind of explore this idea. And I like that we get to see the Brig, and he's kind of broken in that sort of Luke Skywalker and the Last Jedi way.
Oh.
That's about looking at this kind of fallen version of the character that we knew, which I think is very interesting. Especially since later serials in which he shows up, he's just kind of the Brig. But, like, though we get to kind of feel this human kind of fucked up side to him.
Yeah, I really like that. I want to take a step back for a second, because we kind of skipped over something I really wanted to talk about. Because before he starts talking about, like, he remembers Tegan and stuff, he doesn't remember things. And the Doctor is trying to, like, be like, do you remember this? Do you remember that? And he's talking to him about Unit. And he's like, what's up with Benton? And what's up with Harry Sullivan? First off, he says, Harry Sullivan is fucking still doing top secret missions, but Benton sells used cars? No.
Having seen Jon Levine at many conventions, he 100% has the personality of a used car salesman. I wonder if that's a dig at the man. But I couldn't tell you for sure.
But you can't do that to my boy.
I'm sorry. Jon Levine is not a great person.
Oh, no. But Ben's my sweet baby boy.
You are absolutely crushing Joe right now.
I love Ben. Oh, no. My heart hurts.
He's not a monster. He's just very self-aggrandizing.
No, there's a couple of monsters.
But yeah, I was so furious at this scene. Because putting aside the actor... Benton has done no wrong, and I don't think he'd be a used car salesman. Maybe Jon Levine would, but
hey,
not
and Harry
my,
Sullivan
not
is Benton. An imbecile.
Harry Sullivan is an imbecile. Why would he still be out doing missions and stuff? Anyway, So after that, he doesn't remember any of the companions. He doesn't remember Joe Grant. He doesn't remember Liz Shaw. He doesn't remember any of those. Or Sarah Jane. And so the doctor's just saying these things, and he starts having flashbacks. He starts remembering things. And then we just have a very long, you know, here's some scenes from previous episodes montage.
Yeah, JNT loves his montages.
I kind of like them too.
We get the first one in Legopolis. Two of them, actually, because the doctor remembers his enemies and he remembers his friends.
And then we had the one with all of the previous Cybermen.
Oh, yeah.
In Earthshock, yeah.
But yeah, so then he remembers the doctor. And then they talk a bit about, like, there's a lot of just, like, small scenes of just, like, catching up. And I think that's nice.
It
like,
is really nice.
I teach math now. And the doctor's like,
Can I say, in general, though, like, I love these little scenes. This episode, in general, is so well edited. And it's really tight on like a editing level and a script level because we wind up jumping around in two different time periods and having two different Briggs having conversations, and each one sort of informs the other as like later Brig remembers things that earlier Brig is experiencing for the first time, and like there'll be a setup in the past and a payoff in the future, and it's just really well done.
Yeah, it's not confusing either. Like
not
that Little Women
and not
movie.
Redundant.
Oh my god. It's very clear that Joe is joking. Little Women is not hard to follow.
It's a slight dig at that, whoever that movie reviewer was. Another thing I want to mention is before Tegan gets to the brig, there's a scene where she's looking for a doctor, and there's a scene where she runs up to the group of boys, and there is a very unnecessary
yes.
whistle at her. I hated it so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not great. It
severely bugged me.
The thing about it, too, is it felt like it was dubbed in.
I think it was. There was, like, an outtakes thing on the DVD where they showed, like, extended scenes and stuff or whatever. And, like, she runs up and you don't hear the whistle. It was, I'm pretty sure it was 100% dubbed in post.
Yeah, and it's like, we didn't need that.
That was a choice someone made for no reason.
So, yeah, then the Brig starts talking about Tegan. Then we see Tegan meeting young Brig, and the doctor realizes that they must have went back 6 years to when he first started there.
I don't think he doesn't pinpoint the time just yet.
But at some point, we're going to pinpoint the time, and all hell will break loose.
1983 and 1977.
Shit. 1977.
We have completely destroyed unit dating. This is the moment when it happens.
This is the serial. This is the serial that fundamentally destroys unit dating.
I read on the Wikia that it was like purposely put in there to like
to fix it
and only made it worse.
Rhett, you could make it work, except that Sarah Jane says, "I'm from 1980," very specifically in Pyramids of Mars. That was fitting with what the intention was at the time, which was that the unit stories were about 10 years in the future.
Oh boy. I mean, maybe the Brig took some time off. I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
In Doctor Who, the timeline changes all the time.
Yep.
Sure. Actually, I don't think I can watch this show anymore. It's
there's seriously no commitment to continuity.
I mean, I'm the guy who's reading the first Doctor comics where he has two grandchildren named John and Gillian, so.
Here's the thing that's so crazy, though, is that this is the era when they cared the most about continuity.
I know, they could have made it work better, easily. I think that, I read somewhere, and I don't know how, that, like, JNT was really fixated on the Silver Jubilee being the event that lets Tegan know that she was in the... Like, he needed an event to fixate on so that Tegan would realize they were in the wrong year.
Which is, I mean, a smart plotting, but...
But I would think that you could find... You could figure out anything. You know, you could figure out something from 1986 instead. And, well, there it is. There's actually also... We'll get to another thing later on, which originally would have screwed things up, but now that we know that there are pre-Hartnell doctors, it's all... It's all a bit messy.
So then we get another Headmaster Turlough scene. Sorry, Guardian Turlough scene, but it's the headmaster that turns into the guardian. They have another, like, Turlough's like, I'm gonna leave in the castle. And he's like, destroy the doctor.
Yeah, it's a whole headmaster ritual.
And there's another out-of-body experience, but no kaleidoscope this time. It's just, it's that, I've had dreams like this where I am in bed. And, like, I am outside of my body, and I slowly drift back into my body.
Except he doesn't so much slowly drift as kind of, like, climb on top of himself clumsily and lie down.
I've had dreams like that.
I've had fantasies like that.
We've all had dreams. I have definitely had dreams. No one can say that I haven't had dreams. You can't.
I mean, I could.
Yeah, you can.
I wouldn't know if I was saying a true thing, but there's nothing stopping me from saying it.
I mean, you would be saying a true thing, because I've had dreams. We don't need to examine this further.
Turlough ties some bed sheets together and escapes, like a cartoon character. And then the Tegan and the Brick sort of, like, talk to each other and sort of realize who each other is, in a way. The Tegan mentions the TARDIS, and the Brick's like, the Doctor?
God, sorry, I just realized that at some point in the past, there was a writer who first had the idea to tie bed sheets together and was like, this is the best idea.
Whoa, yeah.
I'm a genius.
Now everybody's ripped him off.
Are bedsheets strong enough for that?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure they aren't.
I mean, if you tied them up.
So there's probably a Mythbusters about it.
I was gonna say, I'm about to, like, Mythbusters this off of the roof of our house.
No, don't do it. But what's cool is, like, not only does this make the connection to the Doctor, not only do the Brigadier and Tegan realize that they both know the Doctor, but we realize that the Brigadier hasn't lost his memory yet.
Yes.
But it happens after this.
It's a lot of really good, tight plotting in this serial.
And it's also when they head back and there's that, like, the Silver Jubilee event you're talking about, and Tegan realizes that they're in the past and not in 1983, which they thought they were. Because 1983 has been specifically mentioned before, I believe. She realizes that the burnt guy is probably not the Doctor then. So they go back, and the burnt man... By the way, the burnt man is now less burnt. He's only somewhat burnt. But he's like, we need to leave right now, immediately. And she's like, well, what about Tegan? And he's like, don't care, gotta go. The Nyssa is like, I'm gonna go look for Tegan real quick. And she leaves the TARDIS, and then this is when he reveals that he's not the Doctor to himself. He's like, I'm Modron, and Modron will be a Time Lord. And then he puts on... They covered him up, and it's Force coat. It's not the
80s coat.
The last one. Yeah, the 80s coat. The big red-looking one. He puts on the Doctor's coat, which I think helps sell that maybe he is the Doctor to them. Because they see him in the Doctor's coat. It's got to be the Doctor. So the Brig, Nyssa, and Tegan all meet up outside the TARDIS. And Briggs brags about knowing about regenerations.
I know all about this.
And they head inside, and... Spaghetti brain!
Yes!
Yeah.
It moves.
It pulsates. Modron's brain is hanging out of the top of his head.
It's really gross. He turns around, and someone, I'm not sure who, but either Nyssa or Tegan, like, does this horror movie scream.
I think it was Nyssa. Nyssa's been doing that a lot lately.
I think so, too. I have to say that the cliffhangers in this episode, this serial, are not the best.
To be fair, I might have let out a similar shriek when I saw that gross spaghetti brain.
You were fine until it moved.
Yeah. I was like, oh!
What I do like about the cliffhangers in this serial is I kind of like when Classic Who cliffhangers don't try too hard to make you feel like someone's gonna die. I mean, they do that in the first episode. But even then...
They're just kind of like dramatic moments in the plot.
They're just dramatic moments. It's always like, no, this is a plot turn. And I like that.
I think, yeah, you've sold me.
It usually means that there's more confidence in the storytelling.
Right.
And that is the end of episode 2. And we're now into episode 3, which I have called Modron Problems.
I have called it Maximum Headroom.
Oh, that's the best. Okay. I called it The Brain of Modron.
That's good.
Nice.
I called it Maximum Headroom because they do go into that room that's full of heads.
Oh, I was also thinking because his brain is exposed.
But also because his brain is exposed and he needs a lot of headroom.
Oh, I called this one episode 4.
But episode
that's
3.
Why.
Yeah.
I'm really...
Yeah.
Deep.
Because she's playing with time.
Wait till you hear what I call episode 4.
I'm looking forward to it. I only have 2 notes for this entire episode. And my first note, I will say, Modron is being shifty as fuck here. But then again, the idea that the Doctor regenerates and is suddenly an asshole happens for real in a season. So yeah. I shouldn't like complain too much that anyone falls for this.
Yeah, and he's good at gaslighting them. He's got an answer for everything.
Yeah, he's like the transmat caused a mutation in my regeneration, and I need to go back to the ship because there's a lab that'll fix it, and then I won't have pasta brain. And it sounds fairly reasonable. And he's very like, we gotta go now because if we don't, pasta
brain. The doctor might come back.
Yeah, that too. Meanwhile, the Doctor and Brick have headed to the capsule and bump into Turlo, and they're going to turn the transmitter back on, the one that exploded, to get back to the ship. So I guess to get back to the TARDIS?
Yeah, he's figured out Tegan and Nissa are with the TARDIS in another time period.
Right, because the Brig said so. And then the Doctor is very specifically like, Brig, you gotta tell me, were you on the TARDIS? Because there can't be two Briggs.
Do you remember?
There's this thing called the Blinovich effect, which was mentioned in Day of the Dalek.
Yes, it was.
Yes, it was.
Though I don't think it was explained what it was in that episode, but it is explained in this one. It's just like, if you touch yourself, zap, as Tegan would say.
That's what the church told me.
Mm-hmm.
Though apparently it's fine if it's Christmas.
What?
The Christmas Carol episode.
Oh.
He straight up hugs himself.
I mean, there's a lot of interaction with past versions of selves.
Especially with the doctors.
I think the implication is always, I mean, A, it's whatever the story demands. But B, if there's other time shenanigans going on at the same time, it compounds things.
Right.
Sure. There is a great part of this serial where it's just literally everyone finds out that there are two Briggs, and every single one of them separately are like, oh shit, they cannot touch each other.
The Doctor.
We have got to separate
these
two.
The bad guys. There's like three different groups of people who are like, whoa, hey, keep them apart.
Yeah, the Black Guardian's not happy about it either. This threatens everything. This threatens my plan.
Like, it does end up thwarting all of their plans. But at the same time, it doesn't feel like they know that that's going to happen, because the fact that it happens at all is wild. So it's literally just they're like, no, this is a bad idea. Fuck.
The Doctor and Turlo and Brig have sort of like a mini quest, because the transmitter exploded and they can't use the transmat. But the Brig says he has a TARDIS homing device that he got from Tegan, which has been in previous episodes. It's that little cube thing.
You know, he remembered Tegan, and now he remembers that he kept this thing for some reason, even though he didn't, you know, he forgot a lot of stuff. So it's a little surprising that he still has that, and that he knows where it is.
He's a hoarder.
Yeah, I got junk in my house that I don't know what it is.
Yeah, it's buried in a junk drawer.
Anytime I have anything, like, electrical, I'm like, I don't know what this is, but I can't get rid of it. What if I need it?
Right, but I would not be able to immediately lay my hands on it. I'd have to go through 24 boxes in the basement.
But, like, it's all in the junk drawer.
Chris, do you genuinely only have one place where junk is?
I mean, that's fair, but it does all seem to be specifically electronic junk in that drawer.
And it's broken, so the Doctor has to fix it.
He seems fairly irritated with the Brigadier that it's broken. And it's like he's had it for 6 years.
Also, Tony, think about who you're talking to.
No, I know. As soon as I said it, I regretted it.
I don't own things.
Chris barely had a bed for a while, so.
Whereas I'm old and I have accumulated a lot of shit.
I have accumulated a lot of shit, too.
I might start accumulating shit. Who knows?
That would be different.
That would
I'm
be
excited
different.
About that. Yeah. I'm going to start giving you shit.
Yeah, give me shit. We'll see if I can.
All right.
If people give me shit, I tend to keep it. I just don't. People don't give me a lot of shit.
Marjorie convinces him to materialize on the ship, despite Tegan not trusting him at all. And he's like, all right, cool, I'm gonna go to this room and fix myself. And they're like, all right, let's go. And he's like, nope, I gotta go alone, because if you guys were there, it would mess up my regeneration. And they're like, that doesn't make any sense, because like the last time you did it, we all had to be there for dramatic purposes. And he's like, just different, mutated, because I explained it earlier, just leave me alone, bye. And he goes off on his own.
He kind of becomes a character in an I Think You Should Leave sketch.
He does. And then the Brig, again, being rude. Wait, this is past Brig, though, being rude.
Does past Brig be rude?
He'd be rude. He's like, I'm going to go check on the Modron. You girls stay here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's legit, though. He was always a little sexist.
That's true. Tegan calls him out, though. She calls him a chauvinist.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Not to his face, but...
I love that.
Yeah, and they both share a little look.
Like, man.
Then the Doctor, Turlough, and Oldbrig transman on the ship. Everybody's on the ship now at the same time. Though I was confused for a little bit. I was like, are they still 6 years apart? But no, they're in the same time space. Again, Modron goes to the head wall and collapses, asking for help from the head wall, which I don't think we've ever, have we said what the head wall is? It's just, like, portraits of heads that are, 3D.
Sort of sculptures, but, mounted to the wall.
Like busts.
There's probably a term for that, but I don't know. A relief? I don't know.
The Doctor finds a new room on the ship that wasn't there when he was there last time, and inside of it is this big thing he calls it a regenerator. And it's basically does the regeneration process sort of thing. And there's like 8 chairs. He thinks it's for the burnt guy that he's learned about from Oldbrig sort of telling him about Modron. Then he says he may be dead by now or undead so that we can get the title in the serial. And every time they were saying he may be dead or he may be undead, all I could think about was that scene in Flight of the Conchords where they're saying he may be dead. And he's like, he maybe did and maybe he didn't. What did he do? No, he may be dead. And they can't understand dead or did. I could not think of that scene, this entire exchange.
That's a very good scene. The regenerator also looks a lot like a TARDIS console.
Oh, yeah.
In general, this room kind of looks a little TARDIS-y. And the fact that eventually 8 people are involved feels like kind of TARDIS-y, you know.
I mean, and it is Time Lord tech.
Yes, it is explicitly Time Lord tech.
Turlough, meanwhile, I don't know how he got separated, but he goes and visits the head wall where the Guardian appears over one of the heads and is like, look in this room. And he goes inside there and there's more spaghetti brain people, though I don't think they have spaghetti brains.
This scene is really cool, though.
Very creepy.
The effect really works here. It's a simple sort of overlay, but basically what's happened is that one of the heads on the head wall becomes the Black Guardian. And it's a real simple, overlay, but it's effective.
It reminded me a lot of Scooby-Doo. And then, when the doors open, he goes in there and there's just all these people, waking up. It's very, unsettling.
Yeah, and they're all fucking dressed, in vaguely Harlequin outfits. They all look like fucking David Bowie in the Ashes to Ashes video.
And then we get a great shot that I love. I love anytime a show does this thing. The Doctor and the Oldbrig are sort of in that regenerator room, and Oldbrig hears Young Brig and goes out to investigate, and he stands in the hallway and he looks around and then he leaves, and as soon as he leaves, Young Brig enters the shot and then crosses through and they almost bump into each other, and I was very happy about that.
I hope you love it a lot because there's going to be a lot of it.
Back in 2013, when I kind of got back onto Tumblr after not giving a shit about Tumblr, I made a lot of Classic Who GIFs, and that was one of the ones that I was most proud of, was a GIF where that happened. Of that moment.
I specifically love it because of the split screen. I am a big fan of split screen. I don't know why. I use it a lot in my own work because I don't have actors and I mostly use myself. So it's something that I'm always appreciative of when they do a good job of it in a show. I like that new Paul Rudd show. Man, that's my jam. Living with yourself, so good. Anyway, old Brigadier finds Modron and takes him to the regenerator and is going to help him fix his spaghetti brain.
Because he also briefly thinks he's the Doctor?
Yeah, because he left the room, comes back in and finds this man on the floor, injured.
Yeah, and the thing is, the first time he was badly burned, so it kind of made sense. Here it doesn't make sense.
Not really.
But it also doesn't last very long. He puts him in there and then he goes, wait a minute, I see what you did. You fooled me.
Oh, and then there's another good joke where Tegan and Nyssa have just been hanging out in the TARDIS, and Tegan's like, well, screw this, I'm gonna go look for the Doctor. And as soon as she says that, the Doctor just storms in.
Yeah, all the comedy is farcical.
And you said there weren't any jokes in this episode.
That's the thing, is it's all blocking jokes. 90% of the jokes in the serial are the Doctor walking into the TARDIS or someone walking into a room or walking out of a room. Which actually tracks, considering that this was written by someone who primarily directed.
Yeah, that's true. Peter Grimwade used to direct for Doctor Who before writing for Doctor Who. And has also had a robophobia named after him. Oh, was it Grimwade's disease or something like that?
Yeah, that's right.
The Doctor comes onto the TARDIS, finds out that there are two Briggs, and is really mad about it. Because Brig told him he wasn't going to be there.
Specifically asked about it.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the young Brig is hiding behind a column while all of Modron's people glide to the regenerator room. They, like, book it. I thought
Are they wearing skates?
No, they're just walking real fast.
Yeah, they have these weird dress type things. They go all the way down to the floor. They're clearly walking, but they're walking in such a way as to suggest gliding.
It's very fast and very smooth.
And they're, like, not doing that kind of up and down thing that you get when you bend your legs. And, like, yeah, it's very much a glide.
You know that up and down thing you get when you bend your legs, Tony?
I've heard of it.
No, but, like, for real, when people walk, their head kind of bobs. Because when your legs, like, you're stretched, like, apart and bend to, like, walk, your height goes down.
I think it is definitely a very, like, specific walk that they're all doing to give a sort of unnatural feel.
Yeah, isn't it? Intentional choice.
But you can definitely see their legs moving back and forth in some shots. But it is sort of creepy and unsettling.
It's very creepy.
Then we get another scene of Turlo going into the TARDIS and trying to fly away, and the Guardian says, no!
At some point, I think we missed it, but at some point he talks back to the Guardian and he says, you know, the Doctor isn't what you said. It's clear, like, over the course of the serial that Turlo is developing respect for the Doctor. I think you can see a change in his demeanor toward the Doctor.
The thing about Turlo is that he's kind of Hamlet.
He can't make a decision. He can't, yeah.
Yeah, he's being, like, harassed by this spirit to kill someone. And he's like, but I don't wanna.
To be fair, the spirit's real confusing, though, because there is a point where he's like...
In Hamlet or in this?
No, in this. In this. Where the Guardian's like, where he's like, Turlo does something that's, like, not helping the Doctor. Or the Doctor, like, offers to help, and Turlo's like, no. And then, like, the Guardian's like, why didn't you work with the Doctor?
Well, it was for the Brig, wasn't it? To keep the...
Yeah, something like that.
The two Brigadiers apart.
He's like, I'm supposed to kill the Doctor. What are you talking about?
And he's like, yeah, but if it helps you out, let him help you out. He's like, please, just be clear. I'm very confused about these orders you're giving me.
All I'm saying is, I'd watch Mark Strickson play Hamlet.
Let's make it happen.
Apparently, I want to watch him play Hamlet now, because he looks good.
He's just like, he's been like a wildlife presenter, and like, he does wildlife programs and stuff like that in Australia, and he's like really tanned and fit and good looking.
Let's look this up.
I'm not finding any great pictures of him
right away. But... I'm not seeing a ton of great pictures.
In person, he's good looking.
And no, he's kind of got a little bit of a Sean Beany quality.
Who's Sean Beany?
He lives in my building. He's pretty cute. But like in a rugged kind of way.
So the Doctor finds Modron and the Brig in the regenerator room. And Modron sort of gives exposition about their whole deal. Like they were trying to steal Time Lord regenerations. And now they kind of screwed it up. And now they're stuck in... perpetual agony and unable to die. I think that's the gist of it. And then the rest of them show up and they get in their own little table booth things, their little chairs, and they're all lined up around the regenerator. And they're like, we want to die, and you're the only one who can help us. We need the energy of a Time Lord in order to die. But there's eight of them, and the Doctor's like, I can't do that, or I'll die too.
Is this the first time that this, like, regeneration limit is established?
Second time.
No, the limit is established in The Deadly Assassin, but this is the first time he explicitly says, I have regenerated four times.
So the limit's been set up before, but this is the first time that it's said that he's specifically number five.
Exactly, because before it was set up in regards to the Master.
Got it.
But that's the cliffhanger, is he's like, I can't do it or I'll die. It's not... It's just a dilemma.
But it's also, the way that he says it, it's unclear that he will die.
Yeah, it's not, I don't even think it's that he'll die, it's that...
He won't be able to regenerate anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
Essentially, he would become mortal.
I'm sorry, guys, I can't find any evidence of Mark Strickson being as good-looking as I promised. Maybe he just doesn't photograph well, but he...
I mean, some people don't.
I thought he was good looking.
He's got a charisma. He's got, like, you know.
Yeah, I look handsome as hell. Every photo does not capture it. At least that's what I'm going to say. But that's the end of episode 3, and we are now into episode 4, which I've called The Bad Touch.
Oh. Oh my god. I have called it Briga Don't.
Oh, yeah. That's very good. I called it The Big Bang. That has already been used. I also thought of just calling it The Blinovich.
The Blinovich sounds like a sandwich that you get at a deli.
I've called this one episode 3.
Huh.
Yeah.
Weird.
It's just something to think about.
This one's not as good as the last episode title, I feel like. I feel like you're phoning it in a little bit now.
Damn.
I just want to say before we get too far into this episode, Joe has an amazing sexual charisma in person.
You know it.
I've met him.
That's true. You came out to visit us. Well, it wasn't specifically to visit us, but...
No, I had to work in the area.
We had dinner. It was very nice.
I had a nice dinner with you too.
It was the magnetism of your sexual charisma.
Drew her in.
Tony says derisively,
"Must go to Chattanooga."
Oh, now I'm blushing.
What happens in episode 4?
The doctor says he only has 12 regenerations. He's done it 4 times, and if he fixed these people, it would be an 8-time murder. So no thank you.
Very coincidental they have just the right number of moderns.
Yeah, do these people have a name? Do they have, like, what they are?
No.
No, I don't think so.
Is it rude to ask?
What are you people called?
We're people. Jesus.
And this is the point where the Guardian gives Turlo a new mission. Don't let the Brig touch himself.
All right, we're just going to, like, do this, huh?
Yeah. This is the bad touch.
I'm sorry I said stuff about your sexual charisma.
Turlo finds the young Brig and locks him in the secret headroom.
I think that's pretty fun. It's pretty funny how the Brigadier falls for that. And he even, like, he doesn't even say the doctor's in here. He's like, "Doctor, here's the Brigadier." He does a pretty convincing job, I think.
Well, he's a little shit who lies for a living.
How much does that pay? Then he, like, locks him in the room and he heads out to the doctor, and the doctor's like, finds Turlo, and he's like, "I need you to find the Brig and take him to the transmat." And he's like, "Oh, okay. Kind of already got him. I can't say that though."
It's like, "Oh, I'm going on break then."
And then the doctor and the old Brig go to the TARDIS and TARDIS out. They leave. They're like, "You deal with your old, you know, your regeneration problems yourselves. Deal with the consequences. Peace out." And they TARDIS out of there. And that's the end of the serial. No, Nyssa and Tegan start degenerating, and it's fucking terrifying. They, like, their faces are all...
They get old.
They look like Mark Strickson.
They get kind of zombie-like.
Old, but also, like, they've got Modron's birthmark on them.
They look rough, and they're like, "Help us, stop." And so they go back, and when they go back, the process is reversed.
I like that much better. It's adorable. They turn into kids.
When they get small?
Yeah, because they overshoot it and they become children.
Well, it's not that they overshoot it. They try to leave again. And the doctor's like, "I'm going to try something different."
He reversed the polarity of the neutron flow.
He did.
Yes, he does. Yeah.
Again, the 20th anniversary. They're hitting all the hits.
And when they go that time, they turn into children. One of them went on to be on a soap opera. The other one, who knows?
Just had a nice life.
Yeah.
By not getting into acting.
My question is why they even specifically say this, but, like, it doesn't affect the doctor or the Brig for some reason. They don't say what.
Yeah, they do.
Sexism?
They made physical contact with Modron.
Yeah.
Oh.
They got infected.
It's like a virus.
Oh, so the bad touch
has
a double meaning.
Weird DNA stuff happened and it developed a viral component, the doctor says.
And the Brig didn't touch him and the doctor didn't touch him. Wait, but didn't the Brig help him into the machine?
Which Brig?
Old Brig.
Yeah.
I don't think you made enough contact. I mean...
He just touched his coat.
I think Nyssa and Tegan were with him in the TARDIS for a while, and when he was all burnt and probably giving off viral particles and stuff. Shedding virus, as we say.
They've had more contact. Meanwhile, young Brig has escaped the headroom. He, like, picked the lock and got out. And when they're TARDISing out the second time, the child time, He sees the TARDIS as it's disappearing and then bumps into Modron and all of his people. And they're like, oh shit, there's two of you.
For the third time.
I like that they just stop. They have like a, they have like an evil plan. And like, he just stops and like very calmly and politely is like, okay, you gotta go. Here, look.
I know, that's funny, yeah. I mean, I don't think, you know, they're not truly evil. They did bring it upon themselves, and the Doctor's kind of a jerk to them, but understandably so. They want us to end their existence.
And it's valid, and yeah. But yeah, it is funny how just in the middle, they just stop and are like, no, okay, hold on.
Yeah.
Take five. Everyone, hold on for a second. Take five.
And they take him to the capsule and like, hey, get in that thing and go away. And he's like, how the hell am I supposed to do that? I don't know how this thing works. But he gets in it anyway. And it won't take off because I think it's blocked by something or other. So he takes the homing device and is going to head back to the TARDIS with it. Before he does that, the old Brig asks the Doctor if he can save Tegan and Nyssa with the regenerator. Like, he'll lose a couple of regenerations, I guess, but not all of them, right?
I mean, if he were to just do Nyssa and Tegan. This is the other thing that's unclear.
Is it like a one-to-one ratio?
Because if he was going to lose all of his regenerations before, surely adding two more people.
I think we're supposed to believe it's a one-for-one thing, and he only has so many regenerations to give.
But also, like, just human people, so that's probably like less
true.
We don't know what the ratio is for like modern people though either.
True.
They need to ask the Brig because he's the only one who teaches math. But so the Doctor is like, I'm going to use the device. Young Brig makes a stop at the TARDIS and is like, where the hell is everybody? I'll just go back to that weird room. The Doctor is about to use the device and everybody's hooked up to the regenerator, and then young Brig stumbles in and there's old Brig and young Brig, and they're like, oh, hey, what should we do? Touch each other? The one thing we've been told not to do for three episodes?
By multiple people?
I think old Brig has been warned, but I guess new Brig was just warned by Modron. I don't know why they do it, but they do it.
To be fair, I would do it too. I'd be like, when else am I going to get this chance? So they touch each other, a massive amount of energy surges, and it fixes everything.
At the exact right second.
It cracks Turlough's glass. It kills Modron and his people. And it fixes everything. It fixes Tegan and Nyssa. It's just a cure-all for all the problems.
And I'm fine with it. Because we've spent the whole serial, like the last couple episodes, just being like, something's going to happen. Something's going to happen. And it's just been this long kind of slow burn.
Yeah. And the energy from that replace using the Doctor's regeneration. It was a substitute.
The Brig do this thing that like everyone's been telling him not to do this whole time, and having it just by pure accident fix everything is kind of great.
It is. What I love about it too, and what kind of sells it for me, is Nicholas Courtney's acting in this.
He does a great job just making each Brigadier distinct.
Yeah, and like the way that he looks at himself. It's so like frightened, but otherworldly, but like he seems compelled to do it by some sort of force.
It's like, wow, you said there were two of me, but I didn't really believe it until I saw it.
Yeah. And it's entirely possible that I'm trying to remember which one kind of initiates it, but like, it feels as if maybe the older Brig remembers the young, like, because at this moment, he's also confronting his trauma. In doing so, he has to kind of complete it and enact it in order to become free of it. And, like, it's not just seeing himself, but it's seeing himself in this moment that he is forgotten.
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. That's some deep thoughts. I was just over here making jokes about Brig touching himself, and you got all, like, poetical with it. I was just about to make a joke about get you someone who looks at you the same way the Brig looks at himself.
Horrified?
Yeah.
When I think about me, I touch myself.
So there's also a nice scene here where it's sort of the wrap up, and Tegan thanks the Doctor for almost sacrificing himself for them.
For thinking about it for a minute.
I mean, he was gonna do it. He was in the process, and then Brig interrupted.
And this is, you know, she's hard on him, so this is kind of a softer moment for her. True, now she is with the Doctor of her own free will and not trying to get back home, but it's still, I think, a softening of her attitude toward him.
I think both the Briggs are passed out, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
And they drop them off in their respective times. They just drop them off on the lawn. They just throw them out in the yard like, eh, he'll find his way.
Gotta put him in bed.
On top of this hill that he keeps grumbling about. Like, there's this weird runner about him, like, grumbling about how he keeps having to go up this stupid hill.
Even though the first time he went up it, it was when he was like, oh, you can't get up this hill?
You're disgusting. Yeah.
And then he's like, okay, actually, I get it now. Ugh.
Sort of displacing his trauma on someone else.
He's like, oh, I'm old and out of shape. Damn it. You're disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, oh shit, we forgot about Turlo. We gotta go save Turlo. And then he's already on the ship, so it's fine. He asks to join the team, and the Doctor says, you already have. And then Nyssa and Tegan are like, oh shit.
They look pissed, and they were concerned about him 30 seconds ago. I guess they didn't want him dead, but they didn't want him to come along
either. Exactly, yeah. Right. There's a lot of people in my life that I don't want dead, that I don't want to be my roommate.
That is a very good point.
And then the ship explodes.
Yes.
Just like in the last five, like 3 seconds of the episode, the ship explodes.
That's such an 80s sci-fi ending.
I don't even remember why it explodes. It had something to do with the regenerator, I guess. I don't fully remember why it explodes.
I think the place was rigged to blow once they died.
There was definitely something, you know, they had to get off the ship fast.
It's probably J&T just turned to Peter Grimley and was like, you gotta end this with an explosion. He's like, all right.
We already had an explosion. We had a Brigadier explosion. Yeah, but I want a bigger explosion.
A proper one.
The Brigadier touched himself and he exploded. What more do you need?
All right.
I'm pretty sure I've read that in many fan fictions.
That's your last one.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're at the end of the episode. I don't think I can squeeze in much more. But that's it. That's the end of Modern Undead. We are going to take a quick break and we'll be back for final thoughts.
Hey, weird podcast people. Join us every week on the Flopcast for a half hour or so of silly conversation about comics, music, Saturday morning cartoons, old movies and TV shows, and chickens. It'll be our little secret. Find us at flopcast.net and on the ESO network.
And we're back. Tony, do you know what time it is?
Do I know what time it is in the podcast? Do I know what time of day it is? Do I know what time it is in general? Because honestly, the answer is no.
Do you know what time it is 6 years ago?
One. No.
It's time for
final thoughts?
Yeah!
I thought this was the modern era.
Oh, fuck.
Final thoughts.
I like this serial a lot. Like I said, for a long time, it used to be my favorite Fifth Doctor serial. Enlightenment is edged ahead for me in the last, like, year or so. But I love time travel shit. I love it. And it's, like, so well executed and it's just fun. What's kind of great about this one and Enlightenment, there's a lot of really tight plotting and interesting character stuff and ideas. And then in the middle of it, like, the Black Guardian is just, like, being super maniacally evil with a bird on his head. And it contains both those things. And I love that. I love the Brig coming back. I'm a big fan of the Brig. And I don't hate Turlo. I definitely think, if nothing else, he is an improvement over Adric. Those are my final thoughts.
Yeah, I like this serial a lot. I was worried because we hit a couple of clunkers, and then we hit Snake Dance, and it was great. And this is continuing to be great. I love the messing around with time. And I also like the slow reveals of the twists. The first episode is like, oh, hey, the Brig is back. And then it's like, oh, we're in two different time periods. And then it's even like, oh, we're in the past, not the future. At least that's the way it was with me. So there's like a lot of like slow reveals. And it even had me thinking, is this the Doctor? I don't know. Maybe this is the Doctor, until he straight up says, I'm Modron, y'all. But it does a lot of clever things, and it, like, spaces out these reveals nicely so that it keeps your interest going.
It's very well-paced.
Yeah. Nothing feels necessarily like filler. I mean, there probably is a little bit here and there, of, you know, like going for the homing device and going back and forth. But some of that is kind of cleverly done so that you are doing the like almost bumping into each other sort of thing. And I really enjoy that. I don't like Turlo, but I don't like Turlo
in the way that you feel like you're supposed to.
Yes. It's not like, oh, I hate what they're doing with this character. I hate what they did with Adric, for example. Because I liked Adric to begin with, and then they made him more annoying in a way that didn't make sense. It just felt like they were doing it to have conflict on the show. And like this, like at least it's like built into the character initially, and it makes sense. It doesn't feel weirdly forced. So I like that. I love the design of the ship. And I love the messing around with time. That's always fun. And I'm very happy to see the Brigadier again, even if it might have made more sense to be Ian. And I still don't understand why they won't bring Ian back. Bring him back. Just do it. Anyway, those are my final thoughts.
I've always liked this serial a lot. I was pleasantly surprised at how well it held up. Like both Chris and Joe said, the pacing is great. You know, I find a lot of Classic Who kind of excruciating to watch, unfortunately, because the pacing is so, you know, old style TV, and this one really moves along. The only thing that gets a little repetitive for me is the Black Guardian and Turlo yelling at each other. But like, again, like Chris said, the Black Guardian voice is just so awesome that you forget about it. It works. It's nostalgic, and Nicholas Courtney's performance as the Brigadier is surprisingly complex. And I think it was a really good choice to bring him back for this. Yeah, I just love it.
I think, yeah, it is kind of a treat to get to say, man, what really stands out about this episode of Classic Who is the pacing and just how solid that is. I really, really liked this serial. I think, like, the one thing that, like, got me, and this isn't, like, a bad thing, but, like, the whole time we were watching it, I was like, this guy, the Black Guardian, just picked out, like, a school kid and was like, hey, kill this guy. And then the school kid proceeded to do a terrible job at it. Because he's an idiot school kid. What a bad plan. Maybe next time if you want an assassin, hire an assassin. But, I mean, this is a really fun serial. I enjoyed it overall. I don't have a lot to say because when you go last, everybody already said all the good stuff. I really liked seeing the Brig again. And it was nice it's nice getting to see a character that you know really well, but getting to see a different side of them, or getting to see them in sort of a more complicated light than you ever have before. So that's one thing that stood out about this serial. Other than that, it's just fun. And it's, was this like 3 in a row now that we've been like, that was really good?
2.
2?
Yeah, before that was Arc of Infinity, which was just okay.
Oh, okay. But it was a slog there for a while, and now it's like, oh yeah, there is stuff about this era that I really love. And so it's good to be back in that.
Again, from now on, I said this earlier as a joke, but this is now my 100% headcanon, is that Turlo is 100% Missy's idea. This is a collaboration, and it's because the Master knows the Doctor's type.
Tony, you said he's just a stupid schoolboy. Because he's obviously not schoolboy age, I think I forget pretty quickly that he is supposed to be a schoolboy, and he's just a dude. But I like his performance. I like his softening toward the Doctor, and you know, even though he is desperate to get off Earth, he's,
which is relatable,
like, but yeah, he seems relieved when the crystal is dark and he thinks that he's no longer under the control of the Guardian.
And as a character, like, even a character that like is a little shit who I thoroughly hate, like, from the moment he's introduced, I'm fascinated by him. He's clearly doing some really good acting, and like, even as a little shit, like, he's somebody who, like, he doesn't want to hurt the Doctor. He does kind of slowly, you know, come around to him over time, and like, that's some interesting stuff there. It's like, we don't super know anything about this guy, like, as far as companions being introduced and like starting to travel with the Doctor. Like, all he's really done so far is been an alien and tried to kill the Doctor. So I don't know what his deal is going to be when he's not being, like, mind-controlled into killing the Doctor.
That might be another thing. We don't actually know how old he is.
Yeah, we don't really know anything about him.
Yeah, he made us be posing as the schoolboy, but actually be, like, a full sort of grown adult person. Which is very important, because I do believe that this is a popular ship.
Who?
Turlo and the Doctor.
Yeah, 5 and Turlo.
Turlo and the Doctor?
Yeah.
Oh.
I was oblivious to it at the time, certainly, but I think you're right.
Huh. But he's like thousands of years old. I don't really ship anybody with the Doctor, so.
Yeah. Just the Solitract.
I've gotten used to it, but I was always kind of on the side of an asexual Doctor.
I am too. I like an ace Doctor.
I like the Doctor and Ace.
You ship the Doctor and Ace?
Oh, no.
So before we go, is there anything you guys would like to plug? Let's start with Felicity.
Well, I haven't been on the Flopcast in a little while, but they're doing some funny stuff, Kevin and Cornflake. Just trying to bring you silliness every week to break the monotony of what's going on in the world. I've done some Patreon episodes for the ESO Patreon with Kevin where we watch old movies and talk about them. Most recently, we watched Enemy Mine, which I thought that I remembered really well and found that there's a lot of stuff about it that I did not. But I recommend it. Enemy Mine with Dennis Quaid and Louis Gossett Jr., who most recently was in the HBO Watchmen series.
I still need to see that.
It's really good. It's very good.
We're rewatching it right now. It's of the time, like, it's so appropriate for this time, and yet it's also particularly hard to watch at this time because it's about racist violence and white supremacy in America.
I kind of think, personally, that it whiffs the final episode, but there's so much good stuff in it. Like, multiple episodes of that show, like, can easily lay claim to being the best episode of television that year.
Yes, and one episode in particular that really kind of captures the point of view of a being that exists at all times in the same moment is amazing.
Really good stuff.
So anyway, that's me. Listen to the Flopcast on the ESO Network.
Meanwhile, Dennis Quaid's newest thing is a movie about a regenerating dog.
Okay.
On topic.
Chris, what do you got?
I mean, mostly the same stuff. Go listen to Burn Noticed. Read the book that I wrote with Joe and our friend Ray, Road Trippy, stuff like that. I don't think there's anything new. Go on my Twitter, and if it probably still will be, I have pinned my short story that I wrote after coming out. If you haven't read that.
Very, very good.
Read that, because.
Yes, I really like that story.
I'm really proud of it. I think it's like a really nice little short story. Read it, share it. Yes, A Gift of Pale Sapphire. It's very good, if I do say so myself. So, yeah, just go look at that. That's my plug, and me being trans. I'm plugging my gender.
All right, Tony, you want to plug your thing?
Yeah, please watch Unseen World. There's going to be new episodes soon. There's also, you can watch it on demand now. Season 2 isn't on demand yet, but it will be soon. Oh, God, really soon. Like, sooner than I might be able to get it done. like next month. Oh God, that's so scary. Also, I don't usually plug my Twitter, but I don't have any Twitter followers. So please follow me on Twitter at Forward Power.
That's FWDPWR. Also, can we say the news about the Unseen World?
I don't know, but sure. No one listens to the podcast, so I won't get in trouble for it.
It's gotten picked up for syndication. By like what, 70-something networks?
79
networks.
That is awesome.
I'm really excited and very proud of you.
Thank you. It's actually really funny because I didn't really think anything of it. And like when I told my parents, like my dad called me, my mom called me, my sister all called me separately to like tell me congratulations. And I was like, maybe I should be prouder of this thing.
You should.
And if you want to watch it, it's on watchheartlandtv.com. My plug is the same plug as Chris. Chris is trans. No, the book, Road Trippy. It's on Amazon. Go read it. It's great. It's very fun. Also, if you liked this episode of the podcast, you can check out more on watchyourassalon.com. And if you'd like to help us out, you can become a Patreon patron at patreon.com/watchathon. Or you can find our Amazon wish list at watchyourassalon.com/support. And you can sponsor an episode of the podcast by purchasing a DVD or Blu-ray for us. We'll mention you on the podcast and put your name on our Friends of Rassilon page. Speaking of, special thanks again to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden!
You can check him out at matthewgolden.net. And I also want to give a special shout out to Vincent E.L. for providing us with our amazing theme song.
Thank you, Vincent.
You can check them out at soundcloud.com/VincentEL or VincentEL.bandcamp.com. both work.
I don't think I've ever thanked them as Vincent before, only Vince. It sounded weird when I said it.
Thanks, Vince. And tune in next time when we talk about Terminus with special guest Nicole Mazza of the Terminus, the Doctor Who podcast. I wonder why she picked this episode. but until next time, keep calm and wrestle on.
Goodbye, and I love you in a platonic parasocial way.
Bye. Bye. I'm a girl.
After all, if I was suffering from amnesia, I'd be the first to know about it, wouldn't I?
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.